The following is a presentation of Second City Works, delivered by your earbuds at WGN Plus.
Welcome to the Second City Works, Getting to Yes And. I'm Kelly Leonard, Executive Director of Insights and Applied Improvisation for the world-famous Second City Theater. This is more than just a podcast. It's about getting to the Yes And moment in your work and in your life. Yes And is a key pillar of improvisation. It operates at the front end of creativity. It's about building on ideas and navigating change. This is Getting to Yes And.
Working all day for a mean little man with a clip on tight and a rub on tan. He's got me running around the office like a dog around a track. But when I get back home, you're always there to rub my back. Hey, Julie.
My guest today on Getting to Yes And is Molly Beck. Molly is the founder of the podcast creation site Messy Bun. She created the lifestyle blog Smart, Pretty, and Awkward. She is a marketing expert who has provided digital strategies for numerous companies, including Forbes, Venmo, Rice University, and Hearst. Her work has been featured in Business Insider, Parade, Refinery 29, the Boston Globe, and more. She has a terrific new book out that comes out at the end of September called Reach Out, the simple strategy you need to expand your network and increase your influence. Molly Beck, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kelly. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm happy to have you here. And what I love about your book is that it deconstructs something most people take for granted. Literally, you provide insights, stories, and practical steps so that people can reach out to others in order to build their life. It's kind of as simple as that.
It is as simple as that. That's exactly what the book is. It's demystifying how do you figure out who to contact and what to say when you contact them, and then how often do you follow up or reach out or sort of circle back? How do you sort of build a lasting relationship? That's what the whole book's about. It's sort of a narrow topic that we go really deep on.
Yeah, and this is, this is a thing that most people take for granted. I don't think it's taught in business school. I could be wrong, but I don't think it is. But
no, it's not. I went to business school. It is not.
All right, there you go. But it's vitally important because how we connect to people and you know, anyone who's in sales, anyone who's in business is going to say all business is relationships, and yet they don't teach relationship building in B school. But that's what you do here.
Totally. And when people say, you know, start networking, you know, as soon as you tell someone, oh, I want a new job, oh, I need a mentor, oh, I want to make more friends, everybody goes, oh, okay, yeah, you just got to network. Are you networking? Who are you networking with? It's like, what does that mean? You can't network with 40 people at once. It's a one-to-one relationship, and focusing on that one-to-one sort of makes anxiety around networking decrease, because it's not about getting to know 40 people, it's about getting to know Kelly or getting to know whoever in a sort of a more contained environment.
And it seems to me that there's like an even greater need now for this kind of book in the digital age, where you can literally work and socialize and communicate and eat without ever interacting with another human being. And you talk about using those social, you know, your social media and your digital networks, but not exclusively, that there's a human aspect to this.
There's totally a human aspect to it. And, you know, something that I didn't have sort of space to put into the book, but I think about a lot, is that networking and being able to sort of have fun conversations with people over the internet when all of us are so tied to our computers and our desktops every day is a way to feel less lonely. You know, when I see an email come in from someone that I am friendly with that's not, you know, maybe telling me to do something or instruct, it's not my boss, it's not from a coworker, it's not from someone that's a client, it's just someone that I've connected with that I'm sort of building a relationship with, it's such a joy in my inbox. And it makes my whole workday better, and my goal when I reach out to others is to do the same thing. You know, when you reach out, you're not asking for, you know, someone to have a deliverable on your desk by 5 p.m. You're asking to build a relationship, and that's sort of a joy.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I want to talk to you a lot about this idea around the edge of your network. And I think in our last communication, I told you how cool I thought this was. So you talk in your book about the power of loose acquaintances, individuals you have met in passing, and how mining those connections is so important. And you call them the edge of your network. And you write, quote, the edge is where most of this power resides. Talk to us about that.
Yes. So the edge of your network is, you know, if you think about, you know, the way I think about it is a circle. So you're at the center of your network. You are the sort of spoke at the very, or not the north spoke, the hub at the very sort of center of your network. And then as you go out, you know, you have your best friends, your family, and then you sort of go further and further out. If you think about those people sort of a nice way to start if you're overwhelmed by this concept is, who is someone that you were close to maybe 5, 10, 15 years ago that you've lost touch with? This could be a professor. This could be someone you went to school with. This could be someone from your first job. This could be someone from summer camp. Who's someone that, you know, you always think about fondly? Maybe they work in sort of a similar-ish industry to you. They're in a similar location, but for whatever reason, you sort of lost touch with them. That's a nice way to start, because they're going to, when you start networking, because they're going to be someone that recognizes your name in your inbox. They're going to be excited to connect with you. And because you have sort of that shared history, they're going to be more likely to want to engage with you than maybe someone that's never heard of you. So that's sort of one. The second one is your friends of friends. So think of people that you're close to. Who do they know? You know, just someone that you know always talk glowingly about their coworker, about their friend from high school, about, you know, their next door neighbor. And you always think, wow, that person's doing really cool stuff. Ask to be connected to them. You know, that's someone that's, again, on that edge of that network. And they're going to feel, they're going to maybe recognize either your name or the connector's name in the subject line of the email. And they're going to feel some sort of, you know, social obligation, and I mean that in the best way, to engage with you. So that edge is powerful. And then the last sort of, you know, rung of the edge is people that you've met recently in passing. You had a really quick conversation. Maybe you met at a conference. You sat next to them in a town hall, all hands. You talked to them in the grocery store, and you exchanged business cards because you realized you were in the same industry. It's so easy to meet these people and then never follow up. And all of the magic is going to happen in that follow-up. You know, you can't be offered a new job while you're sitting at a conference table. You know, that magic happens in that follow-up. And those types of people, you know, old friends or old acquaintances, people that you've met recently in passing, and then like sort of secondary connections, that's the edge of your network, and that is where the power is.
So this is cool to me, because I started to connect it to the study we've done around creativity and innovation. And understanding that, it reminds me of an idea around cognitive dissonance. And so most of us go about our day seeing all sorts of regular patterns in front of us, like ABC, red, white, blue, and that innovators are able to operate within cognitive dissonance, where there are no easy patterns. And that's actually where true innovation comes from. And I think what you're proposing here is, you know, it's not at the expense of your regular everyday relationships, but that's not where you're going to find the real interesting stuff. It's when you're reaching out to someone who you don't have that regular pattern with, you're going to make discoveries with them, and you have the opportunity to like create anew from there, maybe even more so than the people you're in communication with every day.
Absolutely. And it's like that thinking about just, you know, talking about pattern recognition. If you always are spending your day surrounded by people that think the sky is blue, and you reach out to someone that thinks the sky is red, suddenly your mind is opened up to all these different possibilities that you hadn't thought of previously, and just what you're talking about. Your creativity, your innovation all sort of expands, and, you know, if you want to be an interesting person, you have to know interesting people, and the only way to do that is to reach out.
And you talk about this in the context of making your life bigger and not smaller. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's an interesting thing, too, because I see a lot of people who are always trying to make their lives smaller. And I understand that in the sense of, like, simplifying and deep relationships and all that. But really, if you aren't looking to expand your life in big ways, you are shutting yourself off.
Absolutely. And also, what does simplify even mean? I mean, if you're looking for the simplest way to get a new project, if you're a consultant and looking for the simplest way to get a new project, that way is that someone refers you by word of mouth. And that means you need to have a network big enough that people are talking about you and referring you. So simplicity isn't always knowing two people. It's sometimes just knowing more people that can bring opportunities to you. So you don't always need to be hunting for them.
And I think another thing that you do really nicely, because it's a reframe, is the way you look at what it means when we talk about our network. Because I think when people are talking about networking, they move into some sort of mechanical aspect.
Yes.
And you write, quote, "Going forward, we will think of the word network as a shortened version of the phrase, the people you know. Network is a noun, not a verb." I love that. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
You got to reframe and think about this as a network is people.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, when you think about sort of like the right way to network, the right way is to be a nice person. key word is person. You know, you have to talk like a human. If you don't say kind regards when you're sending emails to people that you already know, why would you say kind regards when you reach out to a friend? I mean, it needs to be talking like a human, and it needs to be engaging sort of like a nice human and offering genuine compliments and offering something unique to them. And it's being a nice person first and talking about people like people.
And one of the things you talk about, because you bring up a lot of stuff that you've done that's worked and hasn't worked, is that, and this is an improv thing, right? You've got to throw yourself out there and risk looking a little stupid. You've got to be able to fail in order to know how to succeed. So, like, you know, reach out. But yeah, the first act is doing. The first act is acting and reaching out. And if that doesn't work, at least then you've learned. And what we've learned, certainly at Second City over the years, is that those mistakes sometimes become the best opportunities. Because you recover well from a mistake, people remember it.
Could not agree more. Here's a classic example. If you are reaching out, so I've been reaching out for years now. I literally wrote a book on reaching out. I would say my sort of best response rate when I look across all my emails is like maybe 60-65%. That means basically one out of two emails that I send never even gets a response.
Yeah.
And it's still something that's been so valuable to me. And I love what you talk about in improv, like, you know, some of the mistakes, what you learn from the most. Something that I've been doing, and I just realized this morning, actually, and I was kind of laughing about it, is that I wrote what I thought was a really great reach-out email probably like 2 weeks ago, because I'm pitching this book now, so I'm pitching it to journalists, I'm pitching it to other podcasters, this whole thing, and I thought I wrote this really great email, how to pitch it, and the person that I wrote it to never even responded, but every time, for whatever reason, I'm pitching it, I go and find that email, I copy and paste what I wrote to him, and then I sort of reframe it for the next person, and it's like, okay, so this email wasn't a total waste, even though it didn't get a response. I learned how to talk about the book in a way that I think is sort of more helpful, and it's been helpful in all these other sort of pitches that I've been sending out.
Well, so let's talk about emails a little bit, because I like how you talk about it. So one suggestion you give in email is make your subject line awesome. How do you do that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you stay away from stuff that's generic. I hate seeing quick question. I hate seeing advice needed. I huge pet peeve is when you're sending an email and the subject line has the word urgent in it.
Hmm.
No, that is not appropriate. You're staying away from that word. You are to be a joy in someone else's inbox. There is nothing that you are saying is that urgent. You barely know them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to want to call out something that's unique about you and this other person and your relationship. Did you go to a similar school? Are you from the same hometown? Do you have a connector whose name the person would recognize? You know, if you're reaching out to someone, an old coworker you worked with 10 years ago, remember an inside joke you had from back then and make that the subject line. Something that's going to make them chuckle or smile or be intrigued. I heard once that subject lines that have numbers in them tend to get open more. So it's a totally cold email, not someone that you don't know at all, throwing in something, some sort of number can sometimes increase their response rate. Something else I learned while writing this book is that using title case, so having the first letter of every important word in the subject line capitalized, makes response rates and open rates for emails go up.
Hmm.
So just capitalizing the first letter, capitalize all the important words. There's a couple of sort of hints and tricks, but really the main one, if you only retain one thing, is to make it unique to you and the other person in your relationship.
Yeah, that's great. And you also talk about closing an email. And one of the things you suggest is something like, quote, thank you for reading this. And we actually talked to some scientists who have proven that adding an active response in your closing remarks, and they use this one, thanks in advance, resulted in a much higher percentage of response to the email.
I love that. Thanks in advance.
Yeah.
And it's something that's something that's nice, and it's not super formal and sterile and like sincerely or, you know, my dreaded kind regards, something that's nice. But talking about closing of emails is reminding me, something I think is very underutilized in sort of the closing section of an email is the email signature. You can tailor that email signature to be something that you want to highlight to the person you're sending the email to without sort of hitting them over the head with it. So if you have a huge social presence, or if you wrote a great blog post you're really proud of, or if you have a wonderful podcast episode you've been a guest on, include that in your email signature. As you know, people click those links as signatures more often than you would think.
Hmm.
And it's a nice way, without being super pushy about other projects, to show them what you've been working on.
Okay, so that's the stuff that exists in the sort of world of digital reaching out. But you also talk about stuff that you can just do human to human. This is one I love, and I will tell you a quick story. Was talking to Harold Ramis, the late great Harold Ramis, one time, and he had spoken about his relationship with John Belushi and how basically what his advice was is when you go into a room, if you're an actor, you want to stand next to the best person in the room. And for him, that was John Belushi. And you write, like, this idea of sitting next to someone new at a meeting. Like, just the simple act of, like, changing that up might give you an opportunity to reach out in a new way.
Totally. And if you show up to a meeting 5 minutes early, sit next to someone new, it is so easy in a meeting, especially if you are guys working on a similar project, obviously you're in the same meeting, to start a small talk conversation. You already know so many pieces of information about this person that is maybe in theory a complete stranger, even if it's as simple as, wow, parking is really a mess downstairs today. You know, there are so many ways that you can sort of engage with this brand new person because you already have so much in common with them because you're at the exact same event. You're doing something together in real life.
Yeah. There's another aspect that you talk about, which is also tied to an improvisational principle around gifts and the idea of giving and taking. So
yes,
this improvisational principle that your initiations in an improvised scene are always gifts to the other person, and that's how you see them and that's how they should see them. So when you think about your interactions with other people as gift giving, you're actually putting yourself in a mindset of success. And it allows you to take whatever they're giving to you and build upon it. And I don't think that's the way that people normally they're looking for, like, well, what are they trying to say? What do they want? And you don't need to play that game. If you just go in sort of with the gift mindset, I think it's your interactions are going to be happier.
Absolutely. And when you talk about the gift and the favor, the gift is exactly what you're talking about. And I make a huge point, as you know, if you've read the book, that every email needs to start with some sort of compliment. And it needs to be a genuine compliment that only you can give and only they can receive. So you're not going to say, hey, I really liked your book. Boring. This author has heard it 1,000 times. You're going to say, I really liked your book because X, Y, and Z, pull up specific things, and then describe something and how the book has helped you. You know, when I learned about this concept, I put it in practice the next day and I got a great blah, blah, blah. You know, you really want to sort of tailor it to what you're sending. And then the other thing is not every email needs to be about what you're taking. If you have a favor to ask the other person, as long as it's sort of contained and non-Googleable and something that you really only they can answer, it's okay to ask it, but you also can just reach out with a gift. And, you know, maybe you've opened the lines of communication to work together down the line, but and maybe you haven't, but either way, you've been sort of a joy in someone else's inbox, which is sort of the whole point behind reaching out and networking in general, which I think gets lost in a sea of resumes and business cards.
Right. A couple decades ago, I realized that the kids who were in our touring company, and Second City maintains three full-time touring companies, and that's sort of like the AAA system into the major leagues, and they didn't have any media training. Like, we didn't offer that. And at the time, my dad, who had, I think, just recently retired, he was a TV radio guy his whole life. So he came in and led a workshop with our friend Chris Jones, who's the theater critic of the Tribune. They both said the same thing. They're like, if you want to, like, get on the good side of the person interviewing them, start with a compliment. Like, we're really happy to be here. I love your show, or, you know, something like that. And because for when you do that, it instantly puts the person across from you in a positive brain space. They're like, oh, I got a compliment. And I mean, it doesn't need to be fake. It's really just a way of priming a conversation for going well.
Right. And, you know, I always think about this, that if you're looking for the good in other people and you're looking for something to compliment them on, you will see it more often. So if you go in thinking, oh, I really want to start this conversation with something I want to compliment them, whether you're sitting next to them in a meeting or it's an email, you're going to find a genuine compliment just because you're looking for it, which is, you know, works for media training or works for emails or works for really almost any situation.
All right. Can I talk to you about LinkedIn? I have.
Yes, of course.
Okay, so, you know, I spent most of my career as an arts guy, and LinkedIn was like sort of the last social media site I went to. But now I'm doing so much work in the business area that is like totally the fastest growing area for me. And one of the things I love about the book is that you really cover that a lot because, as I've learned, the business community is on LinkedIn. That's where they are.
Yes.
But you can't.
1 in 3 professionals are on LinkedIn.
Yep.
That's an incredibly high number.
Right. And you can't treat, though, your LinkedIn experience like you do your Facebook or your Twitter or your Instagram. It's different.
Yes, agreed.
Okay.
Yes, okay, good.
So,
is there a question? Yes.
Yeah, talk to me. I want you talk about a lot of practical advice in there. What I'd like to know is, like, what are the things that immediately, if you're starting your LinkedIn, you know, account, mm-hmm. what is it that, how do you need to approach that differently than you would your other social media venues?
That's a great question. So the first thing you're going to do is you're going to put a picture. If you don't have a picture, you don't look legit. So get a nice sort of formal-ish picture. It doesn't need to be super stuffy. Just a nice photo of you from, you know, like on sort of a plainish background in natural light, maybe not at a bar, is a nice way to just have a photo where you look friendly and approachable and, you know, humanizing your profile. That's the first thing. Second thing is you're going to go and you're going to start filling out your past jobs. Now, the note here is that I'm using this term jobs very loosely. On LinkedIn, there is no spot to put if it's volunteer, if it's part-time, if it was full-time, if you did it with other things, if it was your side hustle. You can tailor that LinkedIn profile to be what you want to highlight in your professional experience. So if you had a job that you didn't like or that didn't sort of move your career forward or that wasn't the right fit, leave it off there because there's no reason you need to feel obligated. It's not lying to leave something off. On the same note, you're also going to want to think about things that you want to do moving forward. So your LinkedIn profile should be sort of an accurate representation of your past, but also really forward-thinking. What do you want to move into? If you're a podcaster and you know, have done one podcast, but you want to start reaching out to more people, it's fine to have your headline say, podcaster, or, you know, even if you've been, you know, working in a completely unrelated field for the past 20 years, but you know that you want to move into podcasting, highlight those things on your profile. Something else that really trips people up on their LinkedIn profile is the education section. Mm-hmm. Maybe you feel like you don't have the same level of education other people in your field. Maybe it's just something you don't want to highlight, you're not proud of it, or you didn't have it. That's okay. If you're more than, I would say, 10 years out of school, you don't actually have to have your education section because your work experience should somewhat speak for itself. If you feel like you do want to highlight some sort of education experience and you don't have any, it's okay to take a couple of classes at a community college or online and sort of put that, a certificate program, and put that under education. And you don't have to have your major if it's totally unrelated to your field. Also, if you went to school but didn't graduate, it's okay to just leave the graduation date off and highlight some classes you took that may be sort of relevant to your field. So don't feel like you need to have this, like, huge education section that maybe isn't as built out as you would like. It's okay to sort of the same way you would with the job, to play around with it, you know, leave months off job if you didn't work there for a full year, and so have it say, like, you know, 2014 to 2015 if you didn't work there for a terribly long time. So it's okay to play around with those sections.
You also talk about, like, the importance of being truthful.
Oh, yeah, of course. Sorry. Yes, I should have started with that. You have to be telling the truth in your life, especially on the internet, especially on LinkedIn, because all of these things are super easy to Google and check. And people, you know, if you think about people that, maybe not everyone, you know, if you work with someone that you didn't have the best experience with them, if they read your LinkedIn profile, would they still be like, yeah, that's what they did at our company? It shouldn't be, if you weren't, you know, running an entire sales team, don't say, yeah, I ran the sales team. You know, make it truthful.
Sarah Robb O'Hagan, who is the CEO of Flywheel.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah. And her LinkedIn,
she's been out of the book.
Her LinkedIn profile is the best because she highlights every firing, every terrible moment. Like, yep, lost this job because I was too cocky. I mean, like, my entire office was around a computer laughing at the honesty of her LinkedIn profile.
I have to look that up.
Oh, yeah, it's
okay,
killer.
I have to look that up.
Yeah,
and also, that is a great example. She's being a human, like, on the internet. Not everything needs to be so stuffy, really.
Yeah, totally. And the other thing that you mentioned, and this is something that I know I did, so when I was shifting into sort of my new role, I started writing, like, essays on improvisation and as it relates to what I understand about business and what I understand about the study. And you mentioned Jenny Blake, who wrote Pivot, saying,
love her.
She said, public original thinking is my term for one of the best ways to become discoverable. And I think that's great. And that was my experience, that people started, like, tweeting out or sharing my little articles. And I'm like, oh, this is like now putting me in a conversation I wasn't in before.
Right. And also, just to highlight that, all that took was you having a LinkedIn profile and taking some time to write some thoughtful pieces about the area that maybe you were already working at the intersection of improv and business, but it sounds like you started when you were just sort of getting started.
Yep.
And you put some time and create some great stuff, and then suddenly you're an influencer in that space because you've taken the time. You know, I sort of sat once that if you spend like 10 minutes a day thinking about something, at the end of the year, you'll be like, not all fields, but a lot of fields, you'll be like smarter than like 97% of people in that like very specific field. That's what you did. You put some time into it, and now you're the expert in sort of that intersection.
Yep, yeah. You are sort of making yourself part of the conversation in a very sort of friendly way.
I mean, what social media does is it provides, you know, credibility and visibility. You're out there, and you are who you say you are. You can create content around what you are saying you're an expert in.
Totally. All right, so we're coming close to the end, and I am going to ask you a yes-and story. But before we do that,
cool.
I want you to talk to us about Messy Bun. Explain what this is, because it's related to the format we're talking in right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So Messy Bun is a podcast creation site. Similar to if you wanted to start a blog, you would go to Medium. You could start a blog like in 2 minutes because Medium does all the back end for it. Messy Bun does all the back end of your podcast. All you need is a computer with an internet connection, and you can record, edit, add music, add sound effects, distribute, publish on iTunes or other players, get listeners that way, and you can do it all with a Messy Bun. It's a very easy to use system, and we're just coming to the end of sort of the QA of the beta, and it should be up and live relatively soon. You'll hear more about Messy Bun in the book because how I'm building Messy Bun is sort of the overarching case study in Reach Out, so which you know obviously, Kelly, because you read the book.
Yep.
That's Messy Bun.
And I'm curious, like, so your blog, Smart, Pretty, and Awkward, and that's how I discovered you, because people would mention it or send me links or whatever. Very popular, big audience. What made you sort of decide to, oh, I want to do this other thing now?
You know, interesting people want to do interesting things, and I've been blogging for 10 years now. I love it. Having Smart, Pretty, Awkward is the entire reason I have a book, because that's how I have an online audience.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to try new different things, and I think in a lot of ways podcasting is becoming sort of either a component or in addition to having a blog. And I wanted to not just be a creator, but also be sort of more on the business side of sort of this new era of podcasting.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I just look at the last couple of years and also like the last week. So I was literally in New York yesterday, and Ken Davenport is a Broadway producer who hosts a podcast. I went to his office. He, you know, basically got his iPhone out, and he has a nice microphone. He's like, let's go. And that's going to get posted in a couple of weeks. And then I on the plane ride back, I was listening to Larry Wilmore, who has a terrific podcast, interviewing Robin Thede, who was the producer of his show when it was on the air. And she's a Second City alum. And I'm realizing like more and more I'm sending people links to podcasts, and my son is sending me this stuff. And it really does feel like that is – here's what I love about it too, which is it's long form. You know, and everyone yells about millennials and everyone having a short attention span. And you're like, you know what isn't a short attention span? Is a podcast.
Podcasting. Exactly. And, you know, what's really interesting is, you know, for this book, you know, my publisher says, okay, what's your podcast plan? You know, it's a medium now where instead of maybe doing a speaking tour, you do a podcast tour. And you go on 30 podcasts within sort of the same span of time. And you can do it from your house, and you can reach a huge audience. And in a lot of ways, it's replacing some of those like events that authors just need to pay for themselves to go to.
Totally. All right. So we end every episode asking our guests for a yes-and story. So in improvisation, you can't say no if you're making a scene out of nothing with a partner. And you can't just stop at yes. You have to say yes-and in order to explore and heighten on the idea. And I'm wondering if you've got one of those stories from your life or work. It could be from anything where you might have normally said no, but instead you said yes-and.
I definitely have a story. I want to give a quick shout out before I do this to how much being a student of improv has changed my life. I took improv classes a couple of years ago when I wanted to get better at public speaking, and just taking improv classes, I'm far from the funniest or most interesting person on stage. It was such a game changer in my life, so I just wanted to throw that out there.
Great.
If you're listening and really want to do improv, find a place to take a class. It's worth it. Mm. Okay, my yes and story. So about a year ago, I got the contract for this book deal for Reach Out, and I'm so excited. It's like I've been trying to get a book deal for years, you know, yada, 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 and I'm reading it, and it says the initial deadline for the first manuscript was a super, super, super fast turnaround, about 2.5 months, and I'm one of the people that I do not miss deadlines, and I get super freaked out about fast deadlines. Maybe I can't do my best work, and I've never written a book before, and this will be a whole thing, and I just wanted to say no. And I was so freaking scared that I wouldn't be able to meet this deadline. And so I get this email that's like, I'm so excited. I've been like waiting all day to get the email with the contract. It has this date in it, and I'm in Jersey City. I'm about to go to Manhattan. I was consulting for this company in Jersey City, so I'm taking an Uber from Jersey City back to the Upper West Side. And as I'm getting in, I get this email, and I'm just panicking in the back of this Uber. And so I first said, you know, I do what everyone does. I call my mom, I call my dad, I call my best friend, I call my husband. I'm like, I don't know what to do. I think I have to say no. I just can't do it. I don't know how I'm going to make it work. And, you know, really totally spiraling about, you know, and like talking about time management, all these like ridiculous things in the back of the Uber. And, you know, it's a long trip, Jersey City to Upper West Side. So eventually I've run out of people that I can call in the middle of the day to worry about things with. And I'm just sort of sitting there and I'm thinking about how much I need an outside perspective. And it dawned on me that this Uber driver has been hearing me on the phone for the past, like, you know, 20 minutes, having these little breakdowns. And so I'm like, okay, should I do it? Should I do it? Yeah, I'm going to ask him. So I'm like, excuse me, sir. I don't know if you happened to overhear. He's like, I heard you. I'm like, okay, great. So I'm like, what would you do if you were me? And so it's like, this, like, it was probably honestly only like 10 seconds, but it felt like super long time. I thought maybe he didn't hear me. So I'm sort of just like, sort of, you know, hunched up on like the middle console of like this and the backseat of the car, like waiting for his response. And he goes, you know, I think you should do it. And I'm like, you do? And he goes, and you should do it well. And I'm like, okay, okay. I'm like, okay, I'm going to email back right now. And he's like, okay, yeah, you do it. So I emailed back from the Uber, and I was like, hi, yep, I'm going to accept it, and I can make the deadline, and yep, let's move forward. And I got out of the Uber, and I was like, I have a book deal. This is totally happening. And then that was my story.
That's
I said,
great.
Yes, I want to say no.
Do we know this guy? Have we, like, or is this, you know?
You know, it's so funny. I have often thought about going through my Uber receipts because I know what day it was, and trying to find a way to contact him because I would love to send him a copy of the book. I was actually thinking about that. Just like as I was writing the story, I'm like, you know, I gotta find that Uber receipt and send them a copy, because he really was. He was just a person that was super influential at exactly the right moment. And I always think about that. Do it and do it well. And
yeah.
So,
well, talk about the edge of your network.
I know.
Much more
and now he's
Uber
like,
guy.
Look at him. He's a random, quote unquote, random person that was so impactful in my life in that exact moment.
The book is called Reach Out. It's terrific. Please pick it up. The blog is Smart, Pretty, and Awkward. Molly Beck, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's been wonderful. Well, I've been working in a home.